Sustainability continues to move to the forefront of corporate events today. For us as a third party, we're seeing it move from an add-on or afterthought into more of an integrated element of procurement and event operations. Today, we dive into sustainability and the topics around it with one of the leading experts in the space, Lior Rothschild. Lior is a sustainability consultant and senior director at Upswing Solutions, a sustainability-focused business services company. We jump into the state of sustainability in corporate events with some great tools, tips, and resources to implement in your practice, and some other related topics like carbon offsets. I know you're going to enjoy it, so let's dive in. I am super excited to be joined today by Lior. As we talk about this really important topic of sustainability in events, and how to do that well, it's definitely top of mind for us. We're really seeing that. I think this is a year in which sustainability moves from inspirational, big ideas and kind of the conceptual and into the space of being more operational. We're seeing it in procurement. We're seeing it in particularly the interest from our event planners. And so we're really excited to dive in with a true expert on the topic. So if you could, Lior, why don't you give our listeners just some background on you, what you do, what you're up to, and some of the stuff that you're working on.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, Tim. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. And as you mentioned, I've been working in the sustainability space a long time, my whole career, in fact. I'm a senior director with a B Corp certified sustainability boutique consulting firm called Upswing Solutions. And I have a background in events and an even longer background in sustainability across different sectors. And some of my background includes running a sustainable events business that we were a bit early in the space, and we did a lot of educating of the market. And so I took a lot of that experience and started writing a book during the pandemic, kind of imagining what events might look like post-pandemic. And I've been really pleased to see that coming out of the pandemic, there's been such an increase in interest and momentum around sustainability. And so a lot of what I've done over the last couple of years is interview people who are in this space and climb deeper into that community. And I'm really privileged to be able to have a book and have a message to communicate to people about what I think are really interesting opportunities to not only integrate sustainability in new and interesting and like you say, deeper ways, but really to elevate this as a mainstream important part of how events work in the future going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough to get a pre-read of some of that content from the book, which is called How We Gather. Right. And that's right. How we gather matters. And I think it's just such a good collection for people. I think both, people who have experience in the topic of sustainability and want more, and then people who, don't necessarily know how to, as I'd mentioned, operationalize sustainability, what that looks like, where the tools are and resources. And you lay out such a clear plan of how that begins. But one of the things that I really appreciate of how you compose that and how you think about that is really the importance of purpose as it relates to sustainability. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, thanks for catching on to that. That was an important part for me. Where this stems from is that I fundamentally believe that events can be such a powerful force for change in our society. And especially post-pandemic, we've learned that human connection, celebration, and inspiration are not just nice to have. They're vital to our personal growth and well-being. But we've all seen this. Events can be, it's big, risky, very deadline-oriented business, and too often they overlook the responsibility that exists within this incredible platform, and inadvertently contribute to exclusivity and reinforcement of dangerous stereotypes, massive waste and overconsumption and significant greenhouse gas emissions. So the idea of embedding purpose at the heart of events is really an opportunity to say, how do we make sure that doing this right isn't just an add-on, isn't just we're taking a, you know, like the need to, you know, meet our deadlines and move quickly and attract our audience. And when we're at this kind of like stage where we're in the sort of final stages of execution, we'll add in our footprint and other concerns. This is actually saying, how do we go back to first principles? How do we actually walk it all back and kind of unpack exactly what are we doing exactly? Revisit why we're doing it. Why do we feel it's important? Why is this event worth it? If it's going to have an impact, why is it important? And then starting from there to then build in, this is what we want to achieve. This is what we, where the unique attributes and opportunities that we bring as an event organizer. And that level of ambition should then, could then drive everything you built in terms of the impact that you have, the kind of environmental programs you put in place, and the kind of people you attract, both as audience members, speakers, and team members, because as we know, it's so important to really have integrated the, you know, the you want to look and sound like your audience so that they can relate to the content that you're putting forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. So some of what I hear in that is that not thinking of sustainability or other concepts that you're talking about, touching on in terms of inclusion and, you know, diversity of thought, diversity of people and all that stuff isn't necessarily a program or an afterthought, but it's intimately connected with the entirety of the event and the why behind the event. And I think that that's one thing that, you know, far too often in a lot of the clients we work with, you know, events start with, hey, let's dust off last year's agenda and let's just bring that forward and we'll start from there. And I think that there's something to that in terms of, hey, we should build on best practices. We should know the things that worked and why, and we should understand our audience and what they want to see in it. But I think within that too, like also constantly thinking about like, how are we changing? Are we going back to why we have this event to begin with? What's the right format for the event? And I think not only that, but also looking at the event portfolio as a whole to say, what are the various ways that we're connecting with our audiences throughout the life cycle of a year, when in the year, and in through what formats? And so, you know, I think one thing that you could say with sustainability is like, okay, well, in-person events, they bring, like you were mentioning, like they're important for connection, they're important for relationship building society, but at the same time, they do, you know, it's a fairly big carbon footprint to do. So the best thing we should do is just not do events at all. Do everything virtual. But I think we've seen from our clients that that doesn't necessarily solve their social interests and their community's interest in terms of developing relationships.
You hit it on the head on in a number of different ways there. And I think that what we saw during the pandemic was that events didn't go away. They just transformed, right? So everybody was in virtual events. Why? Like, I mean, clearly there was a desire. So people figured out how to deliver it. And then post, you know, pandemic, recognizing that it is still very much in people's lives. But as we've come out of that social isolation component, I mean, we could have just stayed with kind of a virtual events environment, but we haven't. Live events are back, and they're back for a reason. They're valuable to people. They're an important part of human connection. It is a part of how people celebrate everything from traditions to milestones to personal growth and personal development and learning for career reasons. I think it's unrealistic to say it's going away, but I think it is reasonable to say it's changing, and it's important to understand what it will look like in the years ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that intentionality and understanding this thing in the context of the why or throughout the whole program, rather than maybe just even results or the program or I think even perception is an important thing as it relates to this, because sometimes I think that organizations can maybe just chase the easy wins in this space rather than thinking about it more systemically as a part of the event as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, that's a window into an even bigger conversation about how to talk about this in a credible way. And people are looking for those that are credible in this space. There is a demand for more meaningful and sustainable event experiences. And so there is a tendency to want to rush into it without doing your homework. And that can be disingenuous and it can damage reputation. So doing it right is important. That can be complex at times. And so I hope that part of me sharing this story through the book and through this podcast with you, that we can kind of unpack it for people, because it doesn't need to be complex. At the end of the day, it is about getting started, but the communications piece is important. You can't really like get too ahead of where you are. There's some humility that needs to go into that, and a recognition that some of the answers are a bit elusive. And just as a placeholder, happy to talk about it further, but like audience travel is a big one. That's a huge footprint that every event needs to factor in, and without even acknowledging it and saying we're doing great, it's kind of like not talking about the big elephant in the room.
Yeah. So that, that one of the things you'd mentioned there is just starting. What are some challenges as you looked into your the research behind this book and some of the testimonials that you included and the stories and case studies within there? What are some of the challenges that you saw that organizations faced in broaching this?
Yeah, it's an important question. And it's multifaceted. I think a lot of it is a perception that this stuff costs more and everybody's running on lean budgets. And at a time where, we're looking at inflation and supply chain disruptions and, recovery from the pandemic, nobody wants to spend more money. It's reasonable to think that way. But I would say that over the long term, there are cost-saving opportunities. And so that needs to be factored into every decision. And it's true, there often is investment associated with pivoting, moving in a new direction. And so I think it's a bit naive to say, all of this is about cost savings. All of it is, the same, price as it once was. But we are at a time when people are demanding more from you. So doing nothing is also a very expensive decision. And at the same time, this theme of just getting started is really important, because doing everything all at once is very expensive. And so if you're trying to catch up because you're really, really far behind, that can be a very cost intensive thing to do. But starting incrementally in the areas that make sense, where you're going to get a good bang for your buck, like there's no reason not to evaluate what those opportunities might be now. So, but cost is a big theme. So it's important to talk about that. I think complexity is another one. I think that we're talking about kind of a change management process. And so awareness is important. Consulting with experts is important. Ensuring that this stuff is credible rather than just, I saw somebody do this. It kind of looked nice. So we're going to try it out. That's not really a very strategic way to go about it. And I think there's also a growing recognition around greenwashing and credibility. And so people are a bit scared to, be like, well, anything we do, somebody's going to be a hater. We're going to be accused of greenwashing. That can also lead to green hushing, which is essentially like doing something good but not talking about it, which I think is also really dangerous, because if we want to see a growing momentum, it can't be things happening behind the scenes, no lessons learned. And when you, the transparency is important, but also you talked about procurement and supply chains at the top there. I mean, when it comes to events, you know, like everybody's, you know, kind of dipping into the same supply pool of service providers and contractors and venues. If you're not communicating how you're working with a venue, then nobody else is benefiting from that. And so the learning it can be scary. It's kind of like public displays of learning, you know, and it does require some humility. That can be challenging. And then, of course, all this is compiled with the, you know, the things that we know are already challenging about this industry. It's a very deadline-oriented industry. It's, you know, there's high risk, high pressure, and having access to, you know, reliable suppliers is important. And so people tend to go with suppliers that they've worked with, which makes sense, but they may not be necessarily the suppliers that can deliver the level of sustainability related services that are required.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point. I mean, that you touched on a couple things like complexity. I think that's one thing that has, you know, in terms of my experience and the experience of some of our clients, that has kept them, you know, I don't necessarily know how to do that. And I think that third parties like Unbridled, you know, we want to help our clients and the events that we do to help simplify it, to help come with a point of view from our end, to help think through how we can bring that information, be transparent with that, so that it's not incumbent on just each corporation producing the event to understand these things, but also to get some guidance and mentorship along the way. And so, you know, that's certainly something that we're thinking about. And that also goes into how we think about venues and hotels and things like that. If we're asking for it, then they'll start to provide it and lead with that information. But if, as you'd mentioned, if it's not transparent, if it's hush-hush, if there's no demand, if there's no conversation around it, then it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the good thing about capitalism. If there's enough demand, the market will meet it. And so we can't be shy about that demand. We have to be asking for it and telling people, hey, okay, we're going to do this event together. If you can't deliver on this particular goal, let's start to establish a timeline of when you can and start having that conversation. It doesn't have to happen all overnight, but the trajectory needs to be there and needs to be made clear to people so that they can start, you know, getting the equipment, start making the decisions, start hiring the talent and providing the supply to meet the demand.
Yeah. So one of the things that you'd mentioned is just getting started, just start. So I'd love for you to just, you know, let's say that there's an event planner out there, event professional, who's just not really gotten into this too much, whether that's complexity, whether that, you know, there's a lot on their plate already. Where would you advise that a corporate event planner start with their sustainability journey?
Yeah. What a great question. I want to pick up on this, because I think that's a key question for a lot of people, is where do I begin? It feels so big. So obviously you picked up on the fact that in my book, I start with the intention of purpose, really establishing a sense of purpose as the driving force for what the event organization does or the event organizer does. And so I do recommend starting there. Everybody's in a different place, right? Some people are saying, you know what, that's not for me. I just need to manage my greenhouse gas emissions. Where do I start on that specific point? So it doesn't have to be a linear process. It doesn't have to be one in order to do another. Sure, you can absolutely get started with just measuring your greenhouse gas emissions. And that's not a hard thing to do. I mean, it's time intensive, or can be. But it's not rocket science. At the end of the day, there's even free resources available through the GHG protocol, for example, that you can use as an online tool to measure your impact. And at the end of the day, what you're looking at is your power usage, your transportation. So if you got fleets, okay, that's a direct impact. Travel overall is going to be a major issue for every event organizer. There are some considerations to think about. There's and without getting too technical here, there's scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. So scope 1 is really your direct impact, the energy and the transportation, like the fleets. For conferences, typically you're using a venue that has that's like operating under a utility or a grid. So that would be a scope 3 level kind of emissions risk or exposure. And so you need to figure out through your service provider, like what are the emissions that they're generating as a result of you flicking on a light switch and powering the event. For some events, like they have things like diesel generators, right? So that would be more of a scope 1, because it's like, okay, you're renting that equipment. That's like your equipment that you're using for your event. That's not like a utility, for example. That's kind of like one way to think about scope 1 and scope 2. Scope 3 is more complicated, but it's actually where the action is. It's where it's the biggest impact you're going to have. It's like 80% of the emissions are there or more. And the travel that people are coming to your event, like air travel, that's a scope 3 issue. All the impact that is happening through your suppliers and your contractors, that's scope 3. It's harder to measure. But it's not impossible. There's certainly lots of case studies around how to do it. But if you don't already have your scope 1 and scope 2 baseline in place, definitely start there. I went into a little bit of detail into the greenhouse gas emissions because I know that's where a lot of attention is right now. But I do want to just come back and say, I actually think that purpose is a really important place to start, because you're talking about what kind of impact you want to have overall. How does this relate to your core strategy? Do you have the right team to actually deliver on what kind of impact you want to have? And maybe you need to resource up. That might be a multi-year process. So like, you should know that. And every purpose is going to be different. It's not like our purpose is to solve climate change. It's like your purpose could be that we want to create economic opportunity in our community. That's a random example, but it's sort of like there isn't a one size fits all, and it's really asking what are our unique attributes, what is the nature of our event. I often, when I talk to people about purpose, I talk about the opportunity to kind of use this approach of looking back, looking out, and looking within. Looking back is really like, when I first started in this line of work, like, what was it that drew me to this? What did I want to achieve? I wanted to, just as an example, I wanted to create memorable experiences that were going to change the way people view this particular industry and create change or transition. Are you doing that? Maybe there needs to be a return to those kind of roots and that kind of ideal. So that's kind of the idea of looking back. The lookout is like, what's happening in the industry generally? And that could be the events industry, but that could also be like, if you're doing events for, like an energy company or somebody in agri-foods, like what's happening in those industries that your event could be really elevating to the next level? So really understanding the powerful opportunity that exists that relates to the content, the ethos, the aesthetic, all the things that your audience will be experiencing. The idea of looking within is, again, engaging with your team, understanding what expertise looks like already. What are you already doing? Maybe you're doing a whole bunch of really cool stuff that like people are doing as like off the side of their desk kind of projects that you could actually be incorporating as a more strategic approach to how you do your events overall. So these are just like components of the opportunity to really enshrine a sense of purpose at the heart of everything you do. And then I'll just sort of like, I'm getting a bit long-winded. So let me just say a couple of other things, which is really, once you've kind of established your purpose, you know, I talk about the idea of like establishing a baseline, greenhouse gas emissions, waste is an important baseline as well. Like maybe you need to hire or have somebody on your existing staff be the dedicated person who reports directly to the most senior person in the organization. Don't make it like a junior person who like has no authority and kind of like is operating in like a silo. Elevate it to a senior place. If that requires bringing an outside consultant, you know, that might be something that you want to plan for over, you know, in the near term or over a longer term. It does require some training, making sure that everybody has kind of a baseline knowledge. And then there's kind of two other main components. I won't dive too deep into it unless you want to go there, Tim. But two other main components. Great. The two other main components is the supply chain, looking at who is the team that we're bringing together to make this event happen, from our food providers to the people who do our audiovisual, to the janitorial staff, including the venue, the fleet and travel providers, ground transportation. Who are the people that are part of this value chain that we are leveraging and then delivering to our audience? And how can we engage them to help them be part of this? You know, you can get them excited about setting some goals, you know, understand what their existing capacity is. You know, because I'm a consultant and I actually do a lot of supply chain work with people, one thing that often comes up is maybe like a bit counterintuitive. People often approach this idea thinking, my suppliers are going to hate it. And then sometimes the suppliers say, you know, we could have done this years ago, but you just never asked for it. I think that's a really important point to hold on to. If your suppliers don't know that it's important to you, why would they deliver it to you thinking that, well, they don't want to spend more money, so I'm not going to even bring forward my sustainability attributes. So bring it out in them. If it doesn't exist, tell them it's important to you. Tell them you want to keep working with them and you want them to start building capacity in this way. Give them some time. If they don't get there, they don't have a commitment to getting there, then you could start looking at who are the service providers that I could be moving a percentage of this business to. You don't have to get rid of your existing suppliers if you've got great relationships there. It's about starting to source other options. And slowly over time, your supply chain will look completely different. And then the other main component that I want to say relates to communication. How are you going to talk about this stuff? Making sure that you're not exaggerating, making sure that you're being humble. It's really, I think, important language to talk about the fact that you're on a journey. Here's where we started. Here's where we want to go. Here's where we are. We're not perfect, but we're committed. And we know the bar is always rising, and we're committed to rising with it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that point around communication, because the same message delivered two different ways is going to have two different completely you know, in terms of the audience receiving that, in terms of how that's approached from there. And I think that when this is exclusively an issue around compliance, then it's going to feel like that. Nobody wants compliance, right? From children to adults, we want the freedom to choose. We want, you know, to choose the things that we like and get excited about. And I think that that's an area, you know, where planners, professionals across the board, I think if we approach this with more vision rather than simply saying, hey, here's the rules, here's the new standards, comply, what an opportunity to change the feeling of that whole thing. Casting the vision to say, hey, this is something that we're doing as an organization. As you mentioned, this is a journey. Here's why we're doing it. We talked about this. Here's what we're thinking it's going to look like. We're not doing it immediately. We're on a journey. But here's where we're going. We want people who are excited about that too. If that's not you, that's okay. But at least you know where we are. And this is, and also where we're going. Do you want to be on board? That's a choice, not a compliance.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And to me, compliance is sort of like saying, we did the very basic minimum, because that's kind of all you're worth to us. You know, we did not try and go above and beyond. We did not try and really understand what's happening in the rest of this industry. We follow the law. You know, like it's really like undervaluing your audience. And it's certainly not getting us to the future we need for our world. And, you know, if we're talking about events being something more important than just like, you know, glorification of entertainment, but like something that's more important, like about human connection, learning, personal growth, you know, like transitioning our industry. Like these are worthwhile reasons to come together. And we're saying, but that's not important enough to like actually think about what best practices look like and how we could, you know, marshal all the things that we touch, all the resources that we put in place to think about how we could have a positive impact. We just kind of like delivered the basics. That's not enough.
Yeah, that's not exciting. I want to tap into some of your expertise in a topic that I don't necessarily know a lot about, and knowing that this is an area of expertise for you and where you've done a lot of research, I think one thing that I've seen out there in this space is this idea of carbon offsetting. And I'd love for you to just kind of maybe walk through at a high level, you know, what that concept is and what you're seeing in the marketplace in terms of options for that and any recommendations that you might provide.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked about it, because, and frankly, this is one area that I'm getting a lot of feedback about my book is being something that's a bit unique about it, that I've expressed a perspective in there that might be a little nuanced, because right now carbon offsets is controversial in a lot of circles. And I've kind of like heard people, you know, cynically say, well, it's sort of like, you know, like somebody has like a, you know, kind of like extramarital affair, and then the other partner has one as well, then, you know, you've offset that, you know, that thing that you did. It's terrible. You know, and there's all kinds of like, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, like you did something bad, so do something else bad in order to equal it out. It's just kind of like, I've seen very strange kind of like descriptions. I certainly don't look at it that way. I see carbon offsets as a way to measure your greenhouse gas emissions, and then literally pay for the opportunity to say, this is our impact, and we're going to decrease this amount that's either in the atmosphere or going to the atmosphere, which is equivalent to what the impact that we're having. does that mean that we don't have a responsibility to decrease that carbon footprint? Absolutely not. That is an absolute responsibility that you have. But at the same time, as you're on your journey, are you going to say, well, we're not there yet, so we're not going to do anything about it? I think it is part of the responsibility of everybody and especially event organizers. Now that we know what our impact is, we have to, that is at least our level of responsibility to decrease that overall greenhouse gas footprint on the planet and more. Like, you know, why be carbon neutral when you can be carbon negative, right? Like, so the good news is there is a mechanism in place, a globally agreed upon mechanism to measure, certify, verify, and ensure that there is actually emissions either being pulled out of the atmosphere or being prevented from going into the atmosphere. And it's unlike, you know, kind of like other programs that have been tried in the past, which is like kind of like give a bag of money to somebody in a country you know nothing about and hope for the best. Well, actually, there is a system in place to make sure that this stuff is rigorous and that the work is getting done. I'm acknowledging that the last few years, there have been some media stories that have brought to attention a lot of inconsistencies and like a lot of doubt has been cast over the whole system. I think that's good. I think it will improve the system. And there's a lot of transformation and professionalization that's happening in the industry. The fact is that as so many companies around the world have announced their net zero emissions targets, there's been a bit of a gold rush to figure out how to do that. And this industry has grown by like $36 billion just in the last 8 years. You know, it's a correction is inevitable. Having a market correction is a good thing. It will improve the system and create more trust. And that's what's needed. And I know there's all kinds of new like insurance products to say if you know, the product that you invested in is, you know, comes into question, you know, either real or perceived, you know, then either you're going to get your money paid out or, you know, we'll transfer your carbon credits to something that is, you know, like not being questioned in terms of its credibility. So there's lots of new opportunities out there that are probably still a bit nascent, but growing fast to establish trust. And at the end of the day, here's the way I look at it. You don't start with carbon credits as your first move. There's an organization called the Science-Based Targets Initiative, and they recommend that, yeah, SBTI is kind of the acronym that's thrown around. They recommend that you start with, you know, reducing at least 80% of your emissions. And, you know, there's the last like 10 to 20% that's just like a bugger. It's hard. You know, like just being human has an impact on the planet. And so that is the time to be investing in offsets, making sure that they're credible, they're verified with organizations like Verra and Gold Standard. These are good mainstream, very transparent organizations that you can look to. I know Verra has been one of those media stories, but they, you know, I think they've acknowledged some of the inconsistencies. They've made improvements. Some of that reporting, in my opinion, was a little bit kind of like, I don't know, they're kind of like calling out the system more than they are the organization. But the improvements, you know, there is room for improvement there. And I think that, you know, just kind of where we are in this whole journey, there is a mechanism out there that says we are kind of transitioning from an old resource-based economy to a new economy that is looking at protecting nature, developing new technology, removing carbon out of the atmosphere. And this mechanism is designed to move money from that old economy to this new economy so that we could be paying people fairly to be in the business of reducing or eliminating carbon dioxide from our atmosphere. That is important, and investing in it is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it matters.
It matters. It's measurable. Is it the like panacea? Is it like, I've invested in a carbon credit, therefore I am gold, I am beyond reproach? No, like, that's not the end of your responsibility, but it is one of the tools in the tool belt, and it's not going away.
Yeah. Well, this conversation has been awesome and really insightful. I love just getting to tap into your expertise and hear your perspective on a number of these things. I think that what you're doing in our industry is really important, and I'm glad that you've taken the time to prepare materials around it, to speak on it, to help people on their journey. And I think all this in and more is in your book, How We Gather Matters. And I'm excited for that release. Tell us a little bit more about the book, when it's going to be coming out, and what to look for with it.
Well, thank you for asking about the book. I'm super excited about it. It's the first book I've ever written, so it was, you know, like, quite a process. And we're at the stage now. We're launching this book in April 2024. The book is available now for pre-order. I hope we'll link to it in the show notes, but you can also visit lior.ca to read more about the book and order the book. We've got a number of launch events happening. There's a great organization that I'm connected to called MUSE, or Members United for Sustainable Events. Highly recommend it. And I'm doing an online launch event in partnership with MUSE. So that's one opportunity if people want to be part of that launch event. But I'm just really excited to get the ideas out there. I'm trying to speak more with folks who want to have me at their conferences. And, you know, the big messages are, get started. This is an important and growing movement. There's an opportunity here to really leverage the platform that events are to be an important, profound opportunity for change in our society. And as we've said a number of times in this conversation here, it starts with reimagining what the purpose of events are. And I just think that's such an important message to be sharing with people. I'm proud to do so through my book, and I hope people love it. I want to hear from you, and I'd love to know what you think of it and whether it's useful to you.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for the time, for sharing your wisdom and knowledge on this topic. And I'm excited. Even us, you know, at Unbridled, we're on our own journey, and we're talking about collaborating with you on different ways that we can think through how to change some of our procurement policies and some of the ways that we think through how we work with vendors, what that language looks like. And so more to come.
I'm super excited to work with you on that, by the way. That is just like awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks again.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
I hope you're feeling greener after that sustainability conversation with Lior. To dive deeper into sustainability, you can pre-order his book, How We Gather Matters, on Amazon today. Stay tuned and subscribe to the Meetings and Events podcast as we continue to dive into topics like sustainability and so much more. But that's all for now. Thanks for tuning in.